The audio track you're about to listen to was recorded at Lifestreams Christian Church in South Perth, Western Australia. For more information, please visit our website at www.lifestreamcc.com.
Okay. It seems like as if I need to finish the story. That's actually quite profound. The fish, Nemo's relatives or friends or whatever, were all caught in the net from the ship. And he was then trying to help them to escape this predicament. And his idea was, if they all swam down to the bottom, and even when they got to the bottom of the net, they kept swimming down, they would pull the net down. And the video actually shows at some stage that they had such power and leverage that they overturned the ship and all escaped from. It was meant just to express this whole idea of going deeper in order to go further. I understand that this is a time when we seek to not only encourage but inspire you to be a Christian leader. Now, I know that for some people that sounds a bit ominous, and you might say of yourself, I'm not a leader, so this is probably not going to be relevant to me. In the Old Testament, in the Book of Wisdom, Proverbs, there's quite a bit written about leadership. In the King James Version, it's the passages that have to do with the king, the leader of the nation. And there are some very profound principles about leadership that are expressed in that book of Proverbs. I just want to read very few of them to you to give you the flavour of what is said in the Word of God about leadership. The mark of this is in Proverbs 14. The mark of a good leader is loyal followers. Leadership is nothing without a following. Well, you probably or possibly have even further disqualified yourself from the idea of leadership because you say, well, no one's following me. I would doubt that that's true. If you're a parent, then there's people following you, all right. If you have any role in teaching, either formally or informally, training formally or informally, you are an influence on other people's lives, and therefore they will be, to a greater or a lesser extent, following you. If you have any deep friendships, any deep relationships, then it's almost automatic that, at least at various times, you will be such an influence on your friend, for good or for bad, that they will follow you. So I would actually suggest that it's highly unlikely that there's anyone in this building tonight who is not actually in some contexts a leader. In 1 Timothy 3, Paul, a father in the faith, was writing to a younger leader, Timothy. And he indicated in the first verse of that third chapter, you do very well if you have some aspiration to be a leader within the church. In other words, he was saying it's good to actually desire leadership. But then he goes on to talk about what is Christian leadership. And if you've had any opportunity previously to read that passage in 1 Timothy 3 and in Titus chapter 1, which is a very similar kind of passage, you'll recognise that that aspiration towards leadership is encouraged not so much in the light of the person being an incredibly gifted person, although giftedness is obviously of great value. That picture in 1 Timothy 3 is about who we are. It's what I call an inside-out story, and it says, basically, it's character that is the major capacity to have people follow. The major opportunity for being a leader. You may recognise that it says you need to relate well to your family, have the respect of your children. You need to have the respect of the church. And then that gives you the opportunity to have leadership even beyond the church. In other words, it starts from who I am in my most immediate and probably my closest relationship, so that if my wife actually perceives that there isn't good example and modelling and character within me, that is the primary possibility to disqualify me from leadership, because it is about character. It's interesting that in the Proverbs there is just that emphasis. Good leaders, and I'm now reading from Proverbs 16, good leaders abhor wrongdoing of all kinds. Sound leadership has a moral foundation. And then just one more in Proverbs 20. Love and truth form a good leader. Sound leadership is founded on loving integrity. I love that. Sound leadership is founded on loving integrity. People will follow giftedness for a season. They will follow character for a lifetime. One of the potential dilemmas of Christian leadership today, as I move around and talk to leaders and have contact with churches across our nation, is that we've tended to get a bit caught up with what our society believes is the most important and put people in roles according to how good they are at what they do. And that's understandable in one way. But you can be brilliant at doing something individually but not be a team player, and it'll pull the team down. And I can't, and this is really sad, I can't tell you how many churches throughout our nation at any one time have their momentum robbed from them because there are personality clashes or power struggles or some senses of jealousy or wanting to protect your particular part of that ministry, and that deflects momentum and often stalls momentum. Giftedness is important, and therefore it may define the area in which you are a leader, but it will never define the depth and the impact of your leadership as much as character, who you are. Some people actually believe that along with giftedness, one of the most important things about being a leader is that you're flamboyant, you're outgoing, you're the life of the party, you've got the kind of personality that lights other people up, and therefore if you're maybe a bit on the introverted side, or if you're a bit shy, or if you have a personality that doesn't actually seek the limelight, or you don't think very quickly so that you're not very witty, then there's no way you could be a leader. I'm not holding myself up as a leader in any modelling sense, but I have had, as Rod indicated, nearly 50 years of leadership. And do you know that when I did the Myers-Briggs test, my score on extroversion was naught? I kid you not. You can't get any closer towards introversion than a score of naught on extroversion. I am a person who in general life is quite shy. I don't particularly like parties. I follow my wife around because she's much better at it than I am. I don't think quickly. I go home from places and think about the answer to the question or whatever and think that I could have given something brilliant, but my mind just doesn't work. The style of your personality is of no deep consequence to the impact of your leadership. It may help to define what kinds of situations your leadership shines best in. But leadership is primarily about character. It's about going deeper in order to be able to influence more strongly. What does it mean to go deeper? What does it mean to actually become more mature by the growth of the fruits of the Spirit in you so that there is a greater integrity and character that you bring to your life, your discipleship and your leadership? I could talk for a long time about that tonight, but I'm not going to. I just want to take one very, very pivotal aspect of what it means to go deeper in order to go further, and to then encourage all of us to be motivated to be on that journey and on that track. I think our greatest dilemma in life is insecurity. I think that the thing that plagues us more than anything else, gives us more pain than anything else, runs interference with us enjoying life more than anything else, is actually that we may feel that we need to play a game because if people knew what we were really like, they wouldn't like us. Or if they knew what we really were like, they certainly wouldn't follow us. And there's this kind of low-lying black cloud, this thing that follows us around, where we have to try and prove ourselves in every situation to ourselves and to other people in order to try and feel okay. And it's my sense that the major purpose of the Spirit of God in our lives, maturing us towards the opportunity for Christian leadership, is to diminish and at some stage largely banish that insecurity. I grew up in a Christian home, and I thank my parents. They loved us deeply as children. There was no insecurity in terms of their relationship with each other and with God. And yet I've grown up with this need to perform in order to try to feel okay in myself and therefore to impress you and other people that I am okay. And I don't think I'm any different from the rest of us. I've come to believe, when I was studying psychology, the case was put forward that basically some people are insecure because they don't grow up in secure homes or their parents don't love them in an unconditional way. And I think there's certainly some quite deep truth about that. But what I've come to believe is, even if you're brought up in a secure home and a Christian home in a loving environment, our deepest dilemma in a fallen, painful world is that spills over into all of our lives, and that we basically try to perform in order to be okay. And God says, change that around, be okay, and then you perform. And that sounds like as if it's just words. It sounds like it's playing with semantics, but there is a world of difference between an unconditional love of God, who'll never let me go, who just keeps following me, and as I said this morning, runs to meet me no matter what my history or where I've come from, whether it's the pig pen or whatever, runs to meet me and throw his arms around me. And if you and I know that is God's stance towards every one of us, we don't have to perform to be okay. We are okay. Just open the door and welcome that in. And don't just open it once in your life, but open it many times every day. And let God's love and God's grace in. And that is the deepest experience of what will change us from the inside out to be people who are secure. It doesn't mean that we are other than humble, because we know where our security comes from. It doesn't come from us. Everything that we've got that's worth having, as it says in Romans 2, comes from outside us. It's a gift from God and from those around about us. So there's this journey that each one of us are on towards maturity, and therefore the capacity to lead others with integrity and into life change in deep, deep ways. I know that my insecurity has been a major area in my life. As I look back, I think it was probably a factor, not the only one, but a factor in why I trained for ministry, because I wanted to be a helper for others. If you're a helper for others, they like you. And if they like you, you have influence over them. I think the reason why, even in training for ministry, I went into the area of pastoral care and then counselling and psychology was that I wanted to have some kind of perceived expertise that I was a good helper, and to have people who not only liked me because I could help them, but actually became dependent on me, and then they needed me. And I say that as a person who had a very secure upbringing, but it brought me undone. I'm sorry to tell you. I was a lecturer in pastoral care and counselling and burnt out quite badly. The way I went about my pastoral care and counselling, including in the context of a theological college in Melbourne before I became principal in Sydney, involved me being the expert in the area of helping others, and I got to the point where I didn't have any or much left in my own tank. I remember vividly to this day a week where I was staying away from people. I was cancelling some appointments because I just couldn't do it. If the phone rang, I would jump. I didn't want my wife to answer the door because I'd just run out of resources. And so I had to communicate to a few people, look, I can't see you this week. Maybe if there's a crisis at some future stage, then I'll see you. And three people attempted suicide in 1 week. And they blamed me. One person, I remember, wrote me a note that said, "The ship went down, you jumped off." I ended up needing counselling myself and to take some time out of ministry. And in that pretty dark time, you could just imagine that I saw no future in ministry. If you are supposed to be the person who is teaching something and you can't handle it yourself, what's your future? If that's the area of giftedness that you bring to ministry and that's actually fallen apart, then how can you keep going in ministry? Thankfully, I was able to take some time out. I was doing a course over in America at Fuller Theological Seminary, just a gift of God. One of the subjects that I was doing was new approaches to pastoral care and counselling, and part of the 2-week course was that I was randomly allocated to some other student and one other student was randomly allocated to me. And there was some poor guy from Canada, I can't remember where he was from or what his name was, but he got to counsel me for 1 hour a day for 10 days, that poor guy. I was far enough away from home to just let it all go. But I thank God for that opportunity. I came back and went into some counselling with a professional person that allowed me to see that dependence on me rather than God is actually not effective ministry and leadership. And in that deep, painful learning experience, I learned, Keith, if you are going to be able to go further in discipleship and in leadership, you have to go deeper. What does that mean? I can probably express it to you most clearly in a rather cataclysmic way. And my experience of what it means to go deeper in order to go further is very similar in the impact of it, but my going deeper to go further has taken the last 35 years. About 9 years ago, after I had left the ministry at the college and my mentoring had begun, I started to mentor a leader and his wife, and I use this illustration with permission, Peter and Lynn McHugh, who were ministering at a C3 church in Melbourne. And I came to know Peter and Lynn and to know a bit about their story, which was an amazing, absolutely amazing story. Peter, and I'll be very quick about this because it could be long. Peter was a brilliant student in social work and graduated at Sydney University with the University Medal. And that's no mean feat. Peter was a convinced Marxist. And he says that he would sit on the university lawn at lunchtime by himself so that there might be some evangelical union Christians who saw him as a target and came up to try and convert him. And he says he'd converted more of them than they had done anything in him, because he was brilliant at arguing. And he pulled down the rationality or whatever it was of their argument. Peter was married, and he's written openly about this, he began an affair with a fellow social worker working in King's Cross in Sydney. And on a particular occasion, Sunday morning, early in the relationship, he'd left his wife. She said to him, "Peter, I'd like to go to church." And he said, "Oh, what? Church? That's the last place I would even think about going." But he says, because of the initial stages of the relationship, he went along. He said, "I can remember being in church," which was at C3 at Oxford Falls, and Phil Pringle was preaching, and I think the church was about 150 people at that time. That I can remember Phil Pringle preaching, and I was thinking to myself, this guy is a great performer. He is good. He could go on the stage. Good sense of humour, whatever. But what he's talking is rubbish. I could drive a tractor through it. Service was over. They went home. And Pete says, towards the end of the afternoon, she said to me, "Peter, I'd like to go back to church again tonight." And he said, "Oh, no. Oh, no. Can't you see that this is rubbish?" He went back. As he went forward to give his life to Christ, he said his head was saying, "This is rubbish," but his heart was there. He said as he stood at the front, he saw Phil Pringle coming towards him. And he said, "He's not going to push me over. I'm not going over." And he said the guy wasn't anywhere near him, and down he went. He went to a friend's place who was a Christian and had been with him through social work, and got a New Testament. And he said his friend went out surfing, and he started to read the New Testament. And he knew the New Testament well, because he could argue against it. He could pick holes in it everywhere, he said. And he said somehow or other it was very different. And as he was reading the New Testament, and this might be a little bit controversial for some of you, he said he started to talk in a language that he'd never learned. And when his friend came back, he said to him, "Mate, I don't know about this Christianity stuff. I think it's just driven me mad." And his friend said, "Why, Pete?" He said, "Well, I've been babbling. I've been talking in a language I've never learned." And his friend said, "Praise the Lord, you've been baptized by the Spirit." And Pete didn't even know what it was. Now, please trust me, I've been brought up in a very conservative Churches of Christ family. I don't have any of those gifts, so don't write me off because I'm a heretic or anything like that, but I believe that was God, because Pete, from that moment, has been a dedicated follower of Jesus. The lady he had formed a relationship with also made a commitment to Jesus, and therefore they decided that they needed not to continue that relationship. Pete says that he was still in contact with Lynn, his wife's sister, and let her know what had happened to him, hoping that she would let her sister know, and she did. And it took a couple of months before Lynn would even have a cup of coffee with him. And when she did agree to have a cup of coffee with him, and they came together after a period of just talking and whatever, he told her what had happened to him, and she gave her life to Christ too. And they slowly got back together again. They've been married now for over 25 years, have three beautiful adult children, and they've been together in ministry for over 25 years. Pete and Lynn planted a church in Melbourne with about 15 other people, and that church grew from 20 people to about 1,100 in 8 years, with 70% conversion growth. Now, I don't know of any church in Australia's history that's had anything like that kind of growth, with the overwhelming majority conversion. But after a period of years, 320 people left the church in 18 months. And Pete says that on two consecutive Sunday mornings, he found himself curled up in the fetal position, unable to get out of bed to go to church to preach. And what he was saying to himself in his fear orientation was, one of these Sundays, there's not going to be anybody else there, just me and Lynn. Because people were leaving and they were saying, you're the reason why we're leaving. Pete realised that there was a dilemma with his leadership, because people were saying, you're controlling, you might be strong, but it's abrasive, boom, 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 boom. He sought his elders' permission to take some time out of ministry, and he sought some ministry himself, prayer ministry, particularly in New Zealand, and God worked a miracle. He was in prayer counselling, and it was a freezing day in New Zealand, and he and the counsellor had gone outside because she'd challenged him about something that took them outside, and somehow or another, as he came closer to a particular tree, the closer he got to the tree, the more the warmth of the love of God just filled him up inside. He said, I can't explain it, but it was a real physical experience. The counsellor said, Pete, I've got to go back inside, it's too cold. He stayed out there in order to lap up, being filled with the security of God through his love. Sufficient to say that he came back, and after a period of time got back into ministry. And that's when I was alongside him and Lynn, and I took the opportunity to say to her one day, Lynn, is he really different? She said, you've got to believe it, Keith. I said, well, tell me, how is he different? She said, I guess the best way I can explain it, and when it's most obvious, is that when he's under pressure, he behaves very differently. Instead of having to be the boss and controlling and telling everybody how to fulfill whatever will rectify the problem, the kinds of ways that had, as a leader, gotten him into trouble, he's now more likely to draw people together and say, I'm not sure what God's trying to say in all this. Can we just pray together? and see what comes out of it. And then when we know what God's saying, then we'll move ahead. And she said it's when he's under pressure that he actually is different. It's 9 years since that. And I meet with Pete regularly, and he's still on that journey of going deeper in the security of the love and the freedom of the grace of God in order to be able to be an influencer for God with the colours and the flavours of God's character, love, joy, peace, gentleness, patience. Unless we have security not to have to meet our own needs first, we'll never be able to love our neighbour as ourselves. Unless we experience deep love of an unconditional nature, we'll never be able to be compassionate and loving to other people, because you can get it before you can give it. I say to God, and I sometimes say to Pete and a few other people, why did he act so cataclysmically for you, but it's so slow for me? And I think my wife probably asked that question too. But it's the same journey that I've been on as well. Because leadership for God is a great privilege. It is a great honour, but it's tough. Leadership for God will actually take you to the areas of Jesus' compassion, as I shared this morning. And that ministry of compassion, no matter how positive it was for people with miracles and absolutely fantastic teaching, got him into trouble. It eventually crucified him. So I'm not saying that going deeper in order to be able to go further is going to be an easy road, but in actual fact, it is the way that we gain the resilience to be able to be bouncing back. You see, it's not a matter of whether you have pitfalls and problems or heartaches or hurts. They come. It's not fair. I know it's not fair. It's how we deal with them. And even if they knock us over for a while, the real issue is how quickly and profoundly are we able to recuperate, to be healed, to bounce back. 8 months after that time when I was so low, very, very unexpected call came to me. There was a call from the secretary of the College Board in Sydney, and he asked me whether I would consider being the next principal of the college. I actually thought someone was playing a joke on me. My wife said to me, so who was on the phone? And I said, well, I think it was Jack Cook. She said, well, you must know who it was. What was he asking you? I said, well, I think he was asking me to be principal of the college. And Mark said, well, you must know what he asked you. And I'd be almost incredulous about that's what I said, except that I know 5 minutes later I rang him back and said to him, did you just ring me 10 minutes ago? Because I thought someone was playing a joke on me. I would never have been able to be involved in that leadership role for very long at all if it wasn't for the fact that God had begun growing my spiritual shoulders, helping me to go deeper in order to go further. It wasn't very long into the role before I knew that I really wasn't up to it. Other people probably didn't quite realise that as quickly as I did. And I knew that I had 3 options, and one was just admit it, Keith, and resign. The other is keep toughen up. Don't be a wuss. You know, don't feel the pressures of leadership as much. Just get a bit of ticker. And the third was become resilient. Have the security of the love and grace of God to be able to listen to him and those around about me in my leadership to find what is God's way through and beyond. And it did get tough sometimes. I remember a Friday morning when I rang the ministry coordinator of Churches of Christ in New South Wales and simply had one question for him. My question was, mate, do I still have a job? The conference executive had met the night before, and I knew, because we were transitioning the college into a new way of doing it and we'd made some mistakes, I'd made some mistakes, that if we had a consultancy about my leadership, I knew what their first recommendation would be. And I knew that there were some members of the executive who were a bit more conservative than our faculty and our team, and I knew that they didn't like the direction we were going in saying we'll come to you rather than you come to us. And my question simply was, because I knew that it was going to be discussed, do I still have a job? You know what he said to me? He said, Keith, relax. I didn't let it go to a vote. What sort of consolation is that? That seems like a bit of a time bomb to me. And I shake my head and I think, so why didn't you get the message, Keith, and just quit on the spot? I don't actually know why I didn't, but somehow or another, the grace and the love of God had allowed me to gain integrity in perseverance, to be able to find with God's love and grace a way through. Go deeper. It's actually not so much about only leadership. It's primarily about discipleship. I think God is saying to Christians in Australia, he's saying to Christian leaders in Australia, where the impact of our discipleship is mostly or sometimes negative, and the impact of our mission is actually not very powerful at all. Do you know that in a study of Melbourne churches, it was said that the average church had 2 people per year become Christians? In the 1,800 churches in Melbourne, and that there were easily more than 2 people leaving faith or dying during that period of time. So somehow or another, there's a new discipleship which actually will lead to different kinds of leaders. And I think a crucial aspect of that for you and for me, whether it's a journey that's cataclysmic and God turns up in ways that he did for Pete McHugh, or whether it's just this slow but very, very steady and sure changing of the heart, changing from the inside out, gradually bringing a different flavour of love and joy and peace and compassion into me that I can't muster up for myself, but it's the nature of God. Through his Spirit, he puts it in us. It's good to want to be a leader. But people will follow character before and even longer than they will follow giftedness. We have the opportunity to be God's salt and God's light. But he's saying to us, and please don't think I'm picking on you, live streams people, this is the message that I feel passionate to communicate wherever I can throughout Australia at the moment. God is saying to us as Christians, and particularly to us leaders, go deeper, and then you'll be able to go further. Can we pray together? Father, thank you so much that your Spirit in us changes us. It might be fairly slow, but it's sure and it's good. It might be cataclysmic, and I don't understand why you choose one way for one person and a different for another, but thank you that it's the same journey that you want each of us to be on, so that we will be so secure in who we are in you. We don't need anything other than your love and therefore your grace to be okay. And on the basis of that, we can work miracles for you and your kingdom. Thank you in Jesus' name.